And go to God's wild kingdom again with Jacques Cousteau. I think we're going underwater. If I can get this, come on. I think I'm dead. Sometimes things don't respond to my fingertips. So, all right. I think that's Garrett, isn't it? I'm not sure who that is. That's the first selfie I think I ever took, by the way. Am I not on? Okay. People like it when I'm not on. All right. Is that better? Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Hi, Jeff. How you doing? I thought he was greeting me back there. All right, we're talking about loyalty tonight, and this is a lesson on loyalty, the fourth animal that we're going to look at. Let's see. Let's at least see if we can remember what animals we've talked about lately when we talked about loyalty. 3 weeks ago, we talked about an aardvark. I'm going to find a lesson on an aardvark eventually, just for you, Rex. It'll be next week when you're not gone. Connor, you're going to find something about an aardvark, all right? What was it? What? Eddie? An owl! All right. And your mom has a video of an owl eating a possum in their backyard. That wasn't a great horned owl, but that worked. And who is the Bible character we talked about that went along with the owl? Amasa. I think his name was Amasa. I just looked down and I should read the statement that we gave with you, adjusting my schedule to meet the needs of those I'm serving, and it was a mesa. All right, his disloyalty instead of his loyalty. And then the next week we're talking about standing with those I'm serving in their time of need. What was the animal we talked about there? Oh, she's got, I'm going to get somebody different. Do you know? What? Oh, not that one. That was a different one. That was a couple weeks ago, so... it was not. This was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, the goose, the Canadian goose, not just any goose, the Canadian goose, eh? And then, who was the Bible character we talked about with the Canadian goose? I won't say his name this time. You can pronounce it either way you want to. Mordecai or Mordecai, whichever way you want to pronounce that, all right? And then last week, it was being reliable messenger to those I am serving. What he said already? The honeybee. Oh, that's sweet, the honeybee. Who said that? Who guessed that a little bit ago? Was that Ben did? Oh, Ben, do you know the Bible character, the group of people? You don't remember? Never remember who the Bible character was, being reliable messenger to those I'm serving. Rachabites. Again, you can pronounce it any way you want to. Rachabites, Rachabites. And then tonight, we're going to talk about loyalty again. And the statement concerning loyalty is knowing and following the wishes of those responsible for me. Knowing and following the wishes of those responsible for me. Those that we're following, we have to know them well enough to know what they expect of us. They don't have to tell us everything. We understand the direction they're going. We follow them long enough. We understand that's loyalty. I want you to turn your Bibles tonight to what we're going to use for a memory verse. But I want to read some verses before and after it. Philippians chapter number 2. Philippians chapter number 2. And I want to read the whole chapter, but I'm not going to do that. We'll start in verse number 12, and then we'll give you the memory verses in what I'm going to read. Wherefore, my beloved, as ye have always obeyed, not in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God which worketh in you to will and to do of his own good pleasure. Do all things without murmurings and disputings, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. Yea, and if I be offered upon the sacrifice of service for your faith, I joy and rejoice with you all. For the same cause also do ye joy and rejoice with me. Paul said, we're in this together, we're going together, we'll live together, we'll die together, we'll serve the Lord together, come what may. We're all going the same direction. Verse number 19, but I trust in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy shortly unto you, that I also may be of good comfort when I know your state. For I have no man. Though we're all together. We're all working together. There's no one like Timothy. In verse number 20, I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state. For all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. But ye know the proof of him that as a son to the Father, he hath served me with the gospel. Now we're speaking here of Timothy, and Paul says of Timothy, and here's our memory verse in verse 20 through 21, for I have no man like-minded. There's no one that knows me better than Timothy, that no one that has the heart like Timothy does for me, who will naturally care for your state. For everyone's seeking their own. Everybody's got their own direction. Everybody's got their own ideas. But no man like Timothy has latched onto my ideas, and he knows what I'm thinking before I even tell him. That's knowing and following the wishes and responsibilities of those that are responsible, or knowing and following the wishes of those that are responsible for me. Now, the Bible character, before we get into our animal tonight, and I love this, I think some of you are going to like this animal we're going to look at tonight. A young man wanted to assist the great prophet of God, but he first had to learn to follow the wishes of the one he was serving. This young man would one day replace the prophet and become an even greater prophet of God himself. He would have never achieved all the accomplishments for God had he never learned this aspect of loyalty, knowing and following the wishes of those responsible for me. Without them even saying, we know what's expected of us. The animal we're going to look at tonight, and we'll pull this, did I lick my fingers or what? What is that? Not just any bear, but a brown bear, a grizzly bear. Actually, a grizzly bear is in the family of a brown bear. There are other bears that are called brown bears, but it has nothing really to do with the color, though they are most of the time they're kind of a brownish color. But there are other bears that fit in that category, depending on who's doing the classifying of those animals. Some say they're all the same, some say they're different types or whatever. So we won't go into that right now. But the brown bear is different than what most of you, if you've seen bears in this area in the Midwest, and there's been a bear that's been sighted down, and I think he's living up at Kite River Revival Campgrounds, the closest he's been to us in the sightings that I've heard is in the Rochelle area. So he's getting closer. This was a couple of years ago. It's probably somebody's rug right now. But those are not grizzly bears. Those are black bears. They're not brown bears. They're black bears. And of course, that's not necessarily the color. The grizzly bear lives in the far north, in the far western United States and Canada and Alaska. There's more of them in the state of Alaska than there are anywhere else in the world. And Lewis and Clark came across the grizzly bear. Originally, back in that time, they lived basically from here to the west. I don't know if any of them, I've heard reports of people saying they're in here and even east of here, but that's kind of like when people around here talk about snakes. I'm sure it was a water moccasin. I'm sure it was a cobra. It was a garden snake, but I don't know the difference. They're all the same. And the snake experts say that they don't live here, but I'm sure I saw one. And a grizzly bear is referred to by Lewis and Clark. They referred to as the grizzly, G-R-I-S-L-E-Y. They kind of mixed two words together when they said that. Grizzled referred to the color of the bear as the end of the, it had dark hair when it's close to the hide, and as it grew, it turned lighter, kind of like my hair does. It used to turn blonde when it got longer, now it's turning gray when it gets longer. So I need to cut the gray off again here soon. They refer to that, the grizzled color, or gristly, G-R-I-S-L-Y, which literally means fear-inspiring. It's a word that we've kind of replaced that word in modern English by gruesome, or the gruesome bear, the grizzly bear, the grizzle bear. They realized this was a very fierce bear. It's much different than the black bears. Now, black bears, I've always considered them nothing but overgrown raccoons. And the distinction between a grizzly bear, if you see one, you notice a couple things that distinguish them from other bears. The most obvious thing is the hump. Above their shoulders, on their back. And that's solid muscle there. They're very strong arms and backs. And their face is more rounded than most bears. when they walk, their rump, their rear end, is lower than their shoulders. Then black bears, they kind of walk with their rear end a little higher. So they're from the side view, you can see a little difference when you look at them. Now, we used to make a lot of family trips to Canada when I was a kid. And we always had bears visiting our campsites. I think that's why my dad preferred to camp out on islands, because once you scared all the bears off the island, you were kind of safe for a while you're there. But sometimes they just, we lived off of fish, and the fish remains, you kind of dug a hole. But it's hard to dig very far in Canada because everything's solid rock. So you just kind of scrape the moss off the rock and put the fish remains in there and try to cover them up the best you could. And it didn't matter where you put them. It seems like the bears always showed up to find those things. They have a very keen sense of smell. And they always know where to find the food, and we'd often just chase them off. And they really weren't bothering to you. Some folks are scared to death of them, but they really are just kind of a nuisance more than anything. But I remember one year particularly when we went to Canada. When I got younger, there weren't as many of us. There was just five or six of us left instead of the whole tribe. And we went far north into Canada, where they say there could be, they're kind of on the edge of the habitation of grizzly bears. We might just run across one, and there are black bears everywhere. But the grizzly bear is something you don't want to mess with. And I remember the whole trip up there, my little brother Roger, Uncle Roger, was reading a book on grizzly bears. And he's stating all these facts about grizzly bears. And we were a little older now, so we got away from Mom and Dad, and when they weren't looking, we went out hiking through the woods instead of sitting in a fishing boat all day long. We got to go out and explore some things. And I remember Roger and I were walking through the woods, and I remember him reading about how the bears will mark their territory. They'll reach and scratch a tree and mark where they're at, and this is their domain. Don't come around here. Don't mess. And I didn't know anything about animals or that. All of a sudden, we came up to this tree. Now, up, we were so far north, there were no hardwood trees. Everything was cedar, pine trees. It's all that would grow there, and they're kind of gnarly looking to begin with. They didn't grow real tall, but one of them, almost to the very top of that tree, it looked like that. Those are marks that a grizzly bear makes. And I tell you what, we didn't have to say anything to each other. We looked at each other. We were gone. We're getting back in the boat. We're getting away from this thing. I don't know. Who knows what it was, but it sure scared us. But the grizzly bear is literally the highest animal on the food chain. Their average size is 300 to 400 pounds for the female and 400 to 800 pounds for the male. Coastal grizzlies that live along the Pacific coast grow sometimes much larger than those that are inland, maybe because of their diet, and no one's completely certain about that. They have been recorded, a large male has been recorded a number of times to exceed 1,500 pounds. That's a big bear. Standing over 9 foot tall when they're up on their legs. You don't want to mess with them. Their diet varies from season to season. They're an omnivore, what I like to call an opportunivore. That's what I am. I eat whatever's available. They eat whatever's available, whatever's in season. They like to eat berries or grubs. They like to eat fish when they can get fish. They like to eat animals or maybe fishermen and berry pickers. They like to eat. They'll eat whatever they can, whatever's in season. And a grizzly bear can run up to 55 miles an hour. That's pretty fast. 55 or more, you're staying alive. You can't run 55, you ain't staying alive. Remember that slogan? Their feet are kind of a crazy looking thing. I've got a picture of their feet here. He's kind of relaxing. He's got to be at a zoo, I think. But he's kind of relaxing, ready for a pedicure or something. And notice the difference between their front feet and their claw, the front or the back feet and their paws in the front. Those paws in the front are good for digging. They do a lot of digging, and of course they're a good means of defense. You don't want to run in to one of those bad boys. I wouldn't want that thing slapping me upside the head, would you? And those claws are sharp, and they'll rip you right in half, literally. And you don't want to see one that looks like that. I guarantee you. He's having a bad day, and you're about to have a real bad day if you run into him, all right? Of course, everybody likes to see a bear with their cubs. Ready? Aww, aren't they cute? And a mother spends a great deal of time caring and training her cubs. They spend the first year or more with her. And she's literally teaching them how to find food, different times of seasons. They find different things to eat. She's teaching them what to fear. Bears do not have a natural fear of man. You can walk right up to a bear cub. You wouldn't want to, but you can walk right up to a bear cub, and that can be a very dangerous thing if you walk up to a bear cub. They don't naturally fear men. And quite a few animals do that when they're young, actually, before mama teaches them a little bit better. Let me ask you something. You know some things about bears? This is a trick question, all right? So be ready. That means you don't know if you want to answer it or not. If you answer it right, I'll give you two pieces of candy, all right? Do bears hibernate? You got a 50-50 chance, Ben. No, they don't hibernate. I told you it's a trick question. They don't fully hibernate. When an animal goes into a hibernation state, they're kind of in a state of a coma. But a bear doesn't fully hibernate. They rest through the winter, which means they can be aroused. You don't want to arouse them, but they can be aroused. An animal that's hibernating, you can go pick them up, drag them around, do whatever you want to. They're out. Some guys in the morning, I know, are. Before you get your coffee, they are complete, but they don't completely hibernate. And another unique thing about the grizzly bear, from other bears, of course, they go into their dens where they live, but their dens are most often, not always, but most of the time, they hand dig their dens. They can dig faster than a mole. Literally, and they're chasing a mole. Sometimes they can dig it out faster than it can dig to get away from it. With those huge claws, they dig, and most of the time, they will dig their own den that they will live in, that they will sleep in through the winter. And they, there's some things about where they choose to dig their den, usually in a north-facing wall or a cliff. So they're in the complete darkness from the sun, and the snow covering kind of helps camouflage their den. And then they're inside their den, they bring furniture in their dens. They bring straw, they bring mulch, leaves, whatever they can find to make a bed that they sleep on inside their den. They actually, while they're in this state of rest, not full hibernation, they give birth to their babies. So they're not completely, wouldn't it be good if they were completely hibernated, ladies? They're just you wake up and who's this little kid next to me? I got three of them. How'd you guys get along in the first 2 months? But they are not completely hibernating. They're sleeping and they give birth. They nurse their babies. So you can imagine they've got to store up a lot of food before they go into hibernation. Because their body doesn't complete. Now, it slows down drastically so they don't burn off their energy. They don't burn calories like they normally would, but they do still burn calories. They still are somewhat awake at that time and giving birth and nursing their babies. So they've got to really store up some body fat before they go into hibernation. Some of us feel sometimes like we're about ready to go into hibernation, aren't we? They display loyalty. And I want to mention tonight, before we run out of time, we've got to get to the Bible character. They display loyalty by knowing and following the wishes of those responsible for them. You think of these three baby bear cubs. We'll tell you a story about the three bears, all right? These three baby bears, they just come out of hibernation. It's springtime. They're enjoying the sunshine, the warmer weather. And bears have an amazing sense of smell. Mama's taking them out for a walk, and the cubs, all of a sudden, they're practicing their sniffing abilities, And they say to another, "Hey, George." "Yeah, what do you want, Fred?" "Who want Bill?" They say, "I think I smell something over there. Let's go check it out." Sure enough, and they go find something. Smells like a dead animal. I'm getting hungry as we get closer. And they smell that dead animal. Sure enough, they found an animal that's half buried and half eaten. But what they don't realize is it's right next to a wolf den. Uh-oh. You see trouble brewing. And they start playing around with that. And all of a sudden, some wolves show up. And they start squealing and wheeling and yelling and yelping. And all of a sudden, Mama comes to the rescue. And they know better. She's trained them, "Don't get out of my sight." But they tend to sometimes do their own thing, just like kids do. You tell them all, and they're much like human beings in this sense. Mama gives them all these instructions. Yeah, yes, ma'am. And then they go do their own thing. And right, all the moms are looking at me like, I know what that's like. And they've wandered off themselves and got themselves in trouble. So she comes to the rescue and chases off the wolves. The wolves are kind of hidden out to the side, but then she's going after it. She's got the bears over here, the cubs over here, the safety, and she's over here battling the bears. And while she's over there fighting for their life, one of them sees something else he's a little curious about. And he wanders off again. And she gets done fighting the wolf, and unknown to her, the daddy wolf comes home. He was out hunting. He just got back from a hunting trip, and he heard the commotion, and he comes around the back and sees the one little bear cub all by itself. And Mama turns around, and there's Fred and Alfred. I forget what the names are that I gave to them. One of them's gone. And by the time she finds the third one, that didn't listen to Mama's instructions, even after a close call, you'd think they'd pay attention a little bit better. I want you to say, they know they're supposed to stay there. She didn't have to tell them, "You stay here, I'm going to go kill the bad guy. You stay right here." They know they're supposed to do that. And she's off fighting, they come back, and he's wandered off again. Well, now it's too late. I guess the other two will learn from that one's mistake. And that not knowing and following the wishes of the mom who was responsible for him cost him his life. Loyalty is knowing and following whether they're spoken. Of course, she didn't have time to give him instruction. She didn't have time, "Okay, this is what you do. You sit right here in the corner until everything's said." No, they just knew. They've practiced this. They've rehearsed this. They've talked about this in the past. They know. They've seen other threats before. They knew what was expected of them. But they did their own thing, nonetheless. Now, we're going to look at a Bible character tonight that also displays loyalty in the sense that they know and follow the wishes of those that are responsible for them, those that they're following him. Elijah was a great prophet of God. And in 1 Kings 18, the battle between Elijah and the mountain of Mount Carmel, with the prophets of Baal and offering sacrifice. You might remember that great story. And then immediately after that, Elijah won the battle, but he got discouraged. He wanted to quit. Old Jezebel said that I'm going to kill Elijah like he did to all my prophets, my demonic prophets. Elijah got up. I mean, he could face the king, he could face the false prophets, he could face the false gods, but he couldn't face a wicked king, queen. And a wicked queen caused him to go have a pity party. Brother Roloff, you say, he went and had a pity party in Juniper Jungle. Went and sat under a juniper tree and said, "I'm better off dead." And God came and spoke to him through a still, small voice. And shortly after that, in 1 Kings chapter number 19, we won't turn there, we're going to turn to somewhere in 2 Kings in a little bit. Shortly after that, he was introduced by God to someone that became his faithful assistant. He was not related to him, but his name kind of sounds alike. Elijah's assistant was, what was his name?
Elisha.
Elisha. All right. I'm going to give you a piece of candy. All right. There you go. I'm trying to get rid of these. I'm eating them all myself. So, and we're going to talk tonight about Of course, Loyola, I forgot that slide's in there again. Knowing and following the wishes of those responsible for me, for I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your estate, and all seek their own things are which are not the things which are Jesus Christ. And Paul talked about Timothy. And Elijah could say the same thing about Elisha. He became a man that cared and understood not only the ministry, understood not only the teaching, but knew the state of mind that Elijah was in, and knew what Elijah thought before Elijah told them anything. And that's demonstrating true loyalty. And we're talking about Elisha's loyalty. And first of all, I want to just mention this. I'm not going to read all of it, but in 1 Kings 19, when Elijah meets Elisha, he sees him. God says, I want you to go down here. And he took a little walk down there and said, see that guy down there plowing his father's field? Plowing behind 12 yoke of oxen. That doesn't mean all 12 oxen were in front of him. We always picture that. If they were, they wouldn't make a plow strong enough that the oxen wouldn't pull it apart. Literally, there were 12. There were six teams, two oxen apiece. What that means is that his dad was very wealthy. He had a big field and a lot of oxen to plow and care for that field. And they were divided into two, and he had hired servants running the first 11 oxen. And then Elisha, who was the next one in the heir of his father's estate, was running the 12th oxen. In other words, he was behind everybody else to make sure they're doing everything right, and he was in control of them. And Elijah came and took his coat off, which is a good idea right about now, took his mantle off and threw it on, I'm going to hang it on the chair, he threw it on Elisha. And I want to see the first thing about Elisha. Well, he proved his loyalty, first of all, when he was called by God and he completely surrendered. Now think of that. His father was very wealthy. He was willing to give up his inheritance, to give up everything he owned, his livelihood, and follow this man of God that he just met right now. He was willing to forsake everything for God's service. He literally took the yoke that he was pulling behind the oxen, which was a big wooden, you've seen pictures of a yoke, I didn't put one up here for you to look at, where they'd hook the two oxen together with a board between them and the plow was hooked to them. He took all the workings of the yoke and made a fire. He took his oxen. This was his livelihood. This was the heart of his inheritance. And he had a roast oxen and invited everybody for a feast. He said, I don't need this stuff anymore. I've got a God that I'm going to follow. I've got a prophet, a preacher that I'm going to serve and I'm going to live for. He forsook everything. He was called of God and he surrendered everything. That's the first step in Elisha's loyalty. If he never passed that test, he would have never made it to the next ones. And then, secondly, and there's some time here covered. I'm not going to look at all the verses. You can read from 1 Kings 19 and some of the things that Elijah did. And all that time, all those miracles and all those confrontations that Elijah faced, Elisha was right there beside him. He walked beside Elijah. He learned to understand not only how Elijah preached, and what he preached, he learned to understand how Elijah thought. I've talked sometimes about, in the book of Proverbs, the difference between knowledge and wisdom and understanding. And we talk about the knowing, the knowledge of God, the wisdom of God, and the understanding of God. In the book of Proverbs, they build upon each other. The knowledge, for example, this is the easy one to remember, is regurgitating facts. You tell me something, I can spit it back out to you. I know that. But I can know something without any understanding. Understanding is taking next step and learning to apply that to my life. And then, wisdom is learning to apply the knowledge that I've given. And then wisdom is I'm going to get this backwards. I'm going to look at them and make sure I say them in the right order. We have knowledge, and then we add to that our wisdom. And then understanding is the final step where I know the mind and care. I know how you're going to respond before you respond. And that's how we are with God. When we know Him, and then we get wisdom from God, And then understanding is know how God would respond based upon what we know from His Word. Or we have understanding of another person. You live with somebody for a number of years, a husband and wife, or your children, your parents. You start to, if you're keen and you're alert, you begin to you know how they're going to react. You know how they're going to respond. That's understanding. And as Elisha walked beside Elijah, he gained a great deal of understanding. He had a relationship and a respect for him as he walked beside him. And we're going to see this in the next two things I'm going to give you, and then we'll be done. In 2 Kings chapter number 2, we're going to jump to 2 Kings chapter number 2, the events that covered from 1 Kings 19 to 2 Kings chapter number 2. We see Elijah and Elisha standing beside each other, and Elisha is learning from the one that he's following. Third thing that we're going to look at tonight in, we get that to turn, the loyalty of Elisha is tested by Elijah, by God and by Elijah. I want you to see something in 2 Kings chapter number 2. In fact, you see it three different times here. 2 Kings 2 and verse number 1, it says, "And it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind." God's about ready to call Elijah home. That your work's about over with. Of course, Elijah didn't die. He was taken up by a whirlwind into heaven. That Elijah went to Elisha in Gilgal, in the city of Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, "Tarry here, I pray thee. I want you to stay here in Gilgal. I've got some errands to do. I want you to stay here." Now, Elijah gave Elisha a command to test him. You see, if Elisha was paying attention, it didn't matter what Elijah said. He knew what Elijah wanted. That's loyalty. Did you catch that? Now, I want you to see this. It happens three times here, so we can't miss it. Elijah said to Elisha, "Tarry here, stay here in Gilgal, and I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Bethel." I'm going to Bethel, but I want you to stay here in Bethel. Or in Gilgal. And Elisha said unto him, "As the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, I will not leave thee." So they went to Bethel. "I'm not going to leave your side. I know you told me to stay here, but I know what your heart is, what your will is. I know that God's done told you that you're about to leave, and I want to be there to say goodbye to you." So he said, "Okay, well, let's go." So they went to Bethel. And now it's time to leave Bethel and to go to Jericho, down to verse number 4. And Elijah said unto him, "Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, stay in Bethel. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." I'm going to go to Jericho. Now, I was going to look these up on a map. I've got a map on the next page in my Bible, but I'm not going to show you that. These are a little trip between these towns. I'm going to go to Jericho. And Elisha said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, I will not leave thee." So they came to Jericho. Said, "You don't have to go. You're tired. We've been going a long way. You don't have to. Stay here and take a nap, okay? Stay here and sleep or hibernate if you want to." He said, "No, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to stay behind. I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to be with you no matter what you go. We've been together for all this time. I'm not going to let it slip now." Okay, now they're in Jericho together. We come down to verse number 6. And Elijah said unto him, "Tarry, I pray thee, here in Jericho. For the Lord has sent me to Jordan." And he said, "As the Lord liveth, as my soul liveth, I will not leave thee." And they went together. Doesn't matter what you say, doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what opportunity. I know what you want. I know the way you think. I know what you're up to, and I'm going to stick with you. I've walked with you long enough. I've paid close enough attention. I not only have knowledge of you, I not only have the wisdom, but I have the understanding. I know the direction you're going. In each of these cities, they met the prophet. He had preacher schools in these cities, and the preachers came out and said, "Oh, it's time." And maybe he was saying his farewell address, Elisha said, "I'm not going to go without you. I'm not going to miss one day without you." In verse number 7 through 8, they cross over Jordan. Fifty men of the sons of the prophets, this is from Jordan, went and stood in view afar off, and they stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle and wrapped it together and smote the waters, and they were divided hither and thither, so that they too went over on dry ground. Now here's these 50 preacher boys from the school there watching as Elijah takes his mantle and dips it in the water, and the waters parted and they walked across on dry ground. Whew. Wow, what a sight that must have been. They crossed over Jordan, and Elijah on the other side, or Elisha, made a prayer. In verse number 9 and 10, and it came to pass when they were gone over that Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for thee." What do you want? You followed me faithfully, all you can read. You understand my thinking. You understand what I'm doing. What do you want me to do for you before I go? What do you want me to do for thee before I be taken away from thee? And Elisha said, "I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me." And he said, "Thou asked a hard thing. I can't give you that. That's something only God can give you. Nevertheless, if thou wilt see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so." In other words, this is a final test of your faithfulness, your loyalty. Will you stick by me until the very moment that I'm taken out of this earth? And that was his prayer that he made. And it came to pass as they still went on, and he walked by, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire of horses and departed them both asunder. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. Note verse number 12. And Elisha saw it. He was there. Elijah said, "You can stay back here if you want to." "No, I'm not going to stay back there. I want to be there with you. I've been with you this whole time. I'm not going to leave your side." "Oh, you can stay over here in Bethel." "No, I'm not going to say. I'm going to go to Jericho with you." "You can stay in Jericho." "No, I'm going to go to Jordan with you. I'm going to go down to the river. Just you and me are going to. I'm not going to leave your side. I'm going to be faithful to you. I'm going to show you that I'll do exactly. Well, I'll be with you all the time, and I'll do what you want me to do, whether you're going to say it or not." And then the last thing, and of course, I'm going to say this in verse number 12 and 13. Elisha saw it and he cried, "My father, my father." Notice the love and the respect that he had. That was not his earthly father, but he loved him like a father. He understood him. He lived with him like a father, respected him more than his own earthly father, much like Paul and Timothy's relationship with the chariot of Israel, the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more. And he took hold of his own clothes. He ripped his clothes aside in two pieces and took up also the manta of Elijah that fell from him. As Elijah went up to heaven, he dropped his coat, his mantle, and went back and stood by the Jordan. And the last thing I want to see about Elijah is that Elisha got it. He got it. He not only got what loyalty was all about, but he got the rewards of God. Verse number 14, "And he took the mantle of Elijah and fell from him and smote the water," just like he saw Elijah do. "And he said, where is the Lord God of Elijah? God, are you still there? Elijah's gone, but are you still there?" "And when he also had smitten the waters, they parted hither and thither, and Elisha went over. And the sons of the prophets were in view." They saw him in verse number 15. They saw what was going on. Elisha got it because he stood by Elijah and saw him go. He picked up the mantle and went on. He was anointed by the power of God, witnessed by his first miracle. In fact, if you were to count the miracles, I don't remember what the number is, but if you were to count the number of miracles that Elijah did in his ministry, Elisha prayed for a double portion, and he did exactly twice as many miracles as Elijah did. Elisha got it because he proved first and foremost his loyalty to God by proving his loyalty to the one who he served that's responsible for him. "Knowing and follow the wishes of those responsible for me." Knowing what they want before they ask. Understanding the direction they're going. Not because we're waiting for direction. We watched them close enough. We followed close enough. We know what they're thinking. We know the direction they're going. And we understand their heart, their mind. And we can go on with them and we can carry on the work and do even a greater work than they did if we're truly loyal to those that we follow. But Father, we pray.